always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this fine, Tuesday, by you guys, coming off of one of the more impressive wins, maybe the most honestly impressive win. I don't know. They've been racking up so many impressive wins recently that it's kind of hard to compare all of them together. But the Lakers beat the crap out of the Cleveland Cavaliers in this one, and we're going to talk about it. So hit that like button, hit that share button, subscribe to the channel. If you're listening in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts, preferably on Odyssey. But I don't care. I'm in too good of a mood to care about such details. We're going to break down this game. We're going to break down some individual performances from this game. I want to break down the vibes coming out of this game. And look, if there's time and if you guys are interested in it, we could talk about the continued MVP hashtag discourse. I don't know. It feels like it would kind of bring down the vibes of the show. But your call, because at the end of the show, I will get to some of the questions and comments after I roll through the Lakers, again, beating the brakes off of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Final score was 127 to 113. It was nowhere near that close. So we'll talk about this game and enjoy doing so. All right. So, again, 127 to 113 was the final. Now, that final score is pretty misleading because the Cleveland Cavaliers were so down and out by the end of that game that they emptied their bench. Basically, I'll go through the play-by-play here. But the the Cavs, I think, subbed everybody out heading into the fourth quarter. So you had at the beginning of the fourth quarter, you had Donovan Mitchell subbed out. You had Dennis Schroeder subbed out. You had Keon Ellis subbed out. The Cavs basically said, yep, this thing is over. I don't know if it was them saying this thing is over or if it was Kenny Atkinson kind of trying to send a message to his starters and to his main rotation guys that, like, the way that you guys are playing is not going to suffice. Which one of those things, I do not particularly care. The Lakers dominated this game to such an extent that for the entire fourth quarter, the Cleveland Cavaliers were like, if they die, they die, to their end of bench guys. Now, I thought the Lakers were somewhat taken by surprise by that move, and I thought they took their foot off of the gas, and when the Lakers take their foot off of the gas, they become a pretty mediocre to bad basketball team. But when the Lakers had their foot on the gas in this one, which was for the majority of the first three quarters of the game, they were clearly the better team out there. They were getting stops. They were running on those stops. If they didn't run on stops, they got into the half court. And Luka was spectacular, knocking down shots. There was, I thought, a real concerted effort in this one to put LeBron as the screener more frequently, and the Cavs had zero answer for that. If LeBron wasn't the screener, then it was DeAndre Ayton being the screener, and I thought he had a very good game, whether it be finishing at the rim with his little push shots and floaters, or he knocked down at least one jumper from the free throw line that I can think of. Jake LaRavia, I thought, brought incredible energy to this game, was absolutely everywhere, and then compounded that energy with knocking down some shots and finishing in transition. At one point, dunked on Jared Allen. Can't believe that's a sentence I get to say. This was a very good win. And, you know, I was a little nervous going into last night's game against an inferior opponent. And the Lakers were able to, they started slow, but they eventually took care of business against that just abysmal Washington Wizards team. Then on the second night of a back-to-back, they come right back here with the OKC on the other side of that second night of a back-to-back, and they absolutely take it to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now we'll see how they're able to rest and recover and who all is available for Thursday. But this was an incredibly impressive win from like a macro team-wide, culture-wide standpoint. And those are the things that right over the course of the season, I have probably had the most questions about. And the Lakers in this one just answered every single question that we could have possibly asked. They did this shorthanded, by the way, right? They didn't have Marcus Smart in this game, somebody who you would really like to have against a James Harden team, somebody you would really like to have against a Donovan Mitchell team, somebody you would really like to have if you're going to switch to the extent that the Lakers did switch and the other team has an interior presence like Jared Allen, who looked really good at various stretches or during various stretches of this game. So the Lakers shorthanded, missing their like defensive culture setter, comes out here and just absolutely mollywops this Cleveland Cavaliers team that, like, yeah, they've been pretty disappointing this season compared to expectations. They were so disappointing as a group that they eventually just sent Darius Garland to the land of imaginary trees. And you have a, you know, you have James Harden show up there. He played good basketball for a while, has played mostly really good basketball for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Didn't matter. Lakers just took it to them from basically opening tip all the way through to the fourth quarter. And yeah, you had some funny business in the fourth quarter. The Lakers really took their foot off of the gas. I don't really care about that as much as I care about the Lakers beating the Cleveland Cavaliers to such an extent that Kenny Atkinson was like, Donovan Mitchell, James Harden, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, Max Strus, Dennis Schroeder, Keon Ellis, all of you guys, just sit over there. Just sit over there. And then I thought it was really weird, just as like I mentioned this in the offside chat, but I thought it was super weird that like the third unit basically for the Cavs came in there, played with real energy, played with real purpose, and I thought really took the Lakers by surprise as a result. And at no point during that run did like the starters or main rotation guys show any kind of support for those guys. I can't wait to bet against the Cavs in the playoffs. I think they're heading towards a rebuild there. But yeah, great win here for the Lakers. Let's dive into some of the individual performances, starting with the guy who has engendered and has been such a lightning rod for terrible basketball takes, Luka Doncic. In the run-up to the game, we once again had another soundbite from a national media person. This time it was Rachel Nichols, who, by the way, was born in Maryland, Connecticut. Potomac, Maryland? I forget. I'd have to go in and look that up again. But another East Coaster gave her thoughts on a Lakers MVP candidate and once again showed how inconsistent the thinking is often on this award, where it's like, we just can't, I just cannot get myself to vote for Luka Doncic for MVP this season because he just doesn't play any defense. Meanwhile, you look at the like recent history of MVP candidates, and it's Steve Nash won a couple of them, Nikola Jokic won a few of them, James Harden won one of them. You know, like Kobe Bryant averaged 35 points and was a first team all NBA defender. And somehow that wasn't enough, you know, for MVP votes in that particular season. And then now, you know, that the Lakers have pieced together a season that looks like it's heading towards a top three finish in the West, just wrapped up the Pacific Division tonight. And they've done so while navigating LeBron James's lengthy injury, Austin Reeves's lengthy injury. They're doing this with a second year head coach, not second year NBA head coach, but second year head coach. Luka does this after being unceremoniously traded to the Lakers last year to a roster that didn't make a whole bunch of sense for him. The Lakers basically sat out three transaction cycles while they've had Luka Doncic in preparation for this upcoming summer. And yet all of that kind of playing against him, he has kind of kept things going in the right direction here to the tune of a three seed in this unbelievable Western Conference. And yet, like, all of the conversation that I've seen basically nationally about him has been what he doesn't do, what he does, you know, what, and what he did do tonight was lead the Lakers again to a win over a playoff team. In this game, he played 34 minutes, went 13 of 26 from the field, 6 of 13 from 3-point range, 10 of 10 from the free throw line. He grabbed 5 rebounds, dished out 12 assists, had a couple of steals in this game, which is pretty tough to do if you play zero defense, according to some of these analysts, and dropped 42 points. Yet another 40 or more point type performance for Luka, which brings, I think, his total to either 15 or 16 on the season. The Lakers win their 50th game of the season. This is their second straight year winning at least 50 games, and this will be yet another year, it looks like, where nobody from the Lakers gets any kind of recognition from tallying up wins to that extent, given that every expert heading into the every season, it seems like, spends the entire summer doubting whether or not the Lakers would even make a play-in. So yeah, I dabble, I dip my toe into the waters of the conversation from the previous day. And I said I wouldn't until you guys asked for it. If you guys want more of it, maybe I'll get back to it later in the show. But what Luka is doing is fucking incredible. Like, what Luka is doing is just unbelievable. And he's doing so on both sides of the ball. This notion that, like, MVPs have to be defensive stoppers as well is nonsense. Steph Curry won a MVP unanimously. He's not exactly Ben Wallace out there. He's not Scottie Pippen. But no, we pick and choose these things. The league is incredibly talented, and this award is incredibly subjective. And if you have preconceived notions, or if you have preconceived biases rolling into this thing, the Lakers aren't going to win anything. So for those of you who are Lakers fans out there who are hoping to see, you know, the Lakers properly represented in these end of year conversations, it's just not going to happen. Rather than waste energy on that nonsense, what I'm saying is enjoy performances like tonight. Enjoy wins like tonight, because what the Lakers are doing right now is so freaking fun. Right? Like, this is, I'm watching this game, and side by side up on my wall, I have on the main screen the Lakers beating the brakes off of the Cleveland Cavaliers. On the projector screen that I have over there, I have Shohei Ohtani throwing 6 shutout innings while batting leadoff for the back-to-back reigning MLB champions. What the Lakers are doing, and what we as Los Angeles sports fans get to enjoy, not many sports fans get to enjoy this kind of a thing. I say this as somebody who roots for the Minnesota Vikings. I say this as somebody who currently resides in Texas and listens to people talk about the Cowboys the way that people should be talking about Jerry Jones's dumbass and the Cowboys. Like, what we like nights like tonight, most sports fans in most cities don't get to enjoy this. And this is all spearheaded from the Lakers standpoint by a guy playing generational basketball. Like, some of the best basketball you will ever see. The Cavs would like try to make a couple of shots, try to make a couple of three-pointers to get back into it. No, that momentum gets quelled immediately because Luka's knocking down a step-back three-pointer. There was a huge possession at the end of one of the quarters here where the Cavs were like, screw it, we're putting two on the ball. And then Luka throws a skip pass to Luke Kennard, who is obviously a fire alarm type shooter. Kennard has to jump up to catch the ball, saves it basically to Rui. Rui knocks down a wide open three-pointer with 31 or so seconds to go in the quarter. And it's just like, that's what this basketball is supposed to look like. So what Luka is doing, or what Luka did in this game, again, I'll read through the numbers here. He's a plus 21 in the game. 42 points for him in this one, 12 assists, 5 rebounds, 13 of 26 from the field, 6 of 13 from three-point range, 10 of 10 from the free throw line. Once again, like, if you just kind of try to define, like in football, they have a QBR, right? Or the QB rating, where like, I think it's like 158.3 was like the perfect QB rating or something like that. And then eventually they got like QBR plus, brought to you by Amazon. I don't know. And it's more on like a 100 point rating. This was a 100 game for Luka. This was a 158.3 QB rating game for Luka. And this is one of several that he has had basically since the All-Star break. The stuff that this guy is doing on a basketball court as lines 1, 2, and 3 of every team's game plan going into any given night as they prep for these Lakers is bananas. Like, unbelievable stuff from this guy. And it allows, you know, the kind of stuff to take place around him that makes the Lakers look as great as they have looked basically since the I guess it was a couple games after the trade deadline. Another thing I found super interesting from this game, as the Lakers continue to try to figure out the chemistry of Luka and LeBron being on the court at the same time, one thing that I noticed from this game a lot of was Austin and LeBron pick and roll, even while Luka was on the court. And given the way that Luka is shooting three-pointers and given the amount of attention that is necessary to make sure that Luka doesn't continue to go off, you are running these pick and rolls with Austin Reeves and LeBron James. Like, there were several pick and rolls that I saw where like James Harden was guarding LeBron and you have James Harden being put into the pick and roll against Austin Reeves, who was previously guarded by like Donovan Mitchell. And then, you know, Austin is leaving these pocket passes to LeBron, who gets to, you know, get going downhill against a Cavs defense that has to worry about Luke Kennard over there, or maybe like Rui over there. And then you have Luka over there, and you have like Ayton over there. And eventually, you know, the Cavs as a defense collectively just kind of threw their hands up and said, I don't know, man. This sucks. And you know, it's just one of those things that like over the course of the season, it has been the thing really that I have been asking for is, hey, where's the LeBron Austin pick and roll that we saw generate really good looks, really good opportunities in several fourth quarters before Luka got there. Now, if they're reintroducing that, while also getting Luka playing at the level that he is currently playing, I sincerely have no idea what some of these teams are going to do against the Lakers defensively. Now we'll see what that looks like when they take on the Oklahoma City Thunder on Thursday. Like, that's going to be a great test. That is going to be, you know, there's going to be putting a lot of these questions to the test, and I can't wait to see what that looks like. But the Cavs aren't some bad team. You know, they've been one of the elite teams in the East for the last couple of years, and the Lakers just made very quick work with them tonight. And I think it had a lot to do with the fact that LeBron is, like, at one point, he even, this is one thing that drives me nuts in the NBA, where screener goes up, sets a good screen, and defenders know that, like, if they go around that screen and throw their feet out this way, they know that referees, maybe not more often than not, but often enough, are going to say that, like, we're going to think that the screener stuck their hip out. That happened to LeBron tonight, which I thought was interesting. But if you're setting good enough screens, productive enough screens, that it is generating illegal screen calls, then that one call, that one play, doesn't really matter as much to me as the few screens that lead up to it that are so productive that a defender is like, all I can do here, guys, is fall. I have no other option. Is it okay if I just fall here? I'm just going to fall. Please, referee, give me this call. And that's basically what we saw from LeBron as a screener tonight. And, you know, he was making great plays. He had some great drop-off passes to Ayton in the paint. He was getting downhill and getting to the rim. He was seeing shooters on the perimeter. LeBron in this one played 31 minutes, scored 14 points, dished out 6 assists, grabbed 5 rebounds, was a +4 in the game, 4 of 8 from the field, 1 of 3 from 3-point range, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. I also thought LeBron was really good defensively in this game in ways that, again, allows the Lakers to get out into transition. He started the game with a chase down block, you know, and I thought when LeBron is making those kinds of hustle plays, when you have a 41-year-old LeBron doing stuff like that, the rest of the Lakers just kind of take notice and they're like, all right, old man Rivers over there is going to do his thing. Let's all go ahead and join him up. And that's basically what we saw from the Lakers here tonight. And it's kind of cool. You have Luka going off to the extent that he did. And then the next closest scorer to him was actually Ayton. Outside of that, it was very balanced scoring from the guys who were actually scoring, right? Like, the guy who played significant minutes in this game and didn't score like double digits or whatever is Luke Kennard. But you know, if he is out there, he's generating such gravity that, like, if he's scoring, great. But even if he isn't scoring, you know that the defense is being warped by his just being out there. So this was a pretty cool game design here from the Lakers offensively. Obviously starts with Luka and the things that he can do on the ball, but also I think very heavily involves LeBron as a screener, and everything really opens up from there. Let's see the other, let's shout out a couple of, Austin was technically closer to Luka than Ayton. Austin scored 19, Ayton scored 18. Austin went, played 37 minutes, 6 of 16 from the field, 2 of 9 from 3-point range. His shooting continues to be a bit of a concern. Like, I still say that the wrist is bothering a little bit. They said during the broadcast that no player in the NBA played more minutes in the month of March than Austin did. And that honestly tracks. He looks pretty exhausted. But Austin finished this game 19 points, 6 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, a block. Did have 5 turnovers. Thought he over-penetrated in some moments during this game. Something that he is always, I think, going to be kind of battling with. Against teams with longer or more athletic defenders. But it's insane when Option number three is a guy like Austin, who just this season damn near dropped a 50-point triple-double. It's nuts that, like, you know, most nights this guy is probably going to be option number two. On a game like tonight, he was, like, technically option number two in terms of usage, I would probably imagine. But, like, I think of it like a pitcher where, you know, pitch number one is a 101-mile-an-hour four-seam fastball with a little bit of movement. There's Luca. And then outside of that, you have, like, just knockout curve that falls off the table. And then if that isn't enough, you have this just backbreaking changeup or backbreaking split finger or something like that, that just completely ties batters up. That's what the Lakers offense does to you with these three guys, with them playing the way that they are, right? Where they are actually compounding each other's strengths offensively. In the half court, there's just not much that you can do against these guys. And tonight, like, Austin got to play kind of a smaller role, and maybe that's going to be the case in the playoffs. And if that is the case, then okay, fine. There's that LeBron James guy who can step up. So I do need to see LeBron, or I do need to see, sorry, Austin shoot better from three-point range. I do need to see Austin turn the ball over a little bit less than he did in tonight's game. But at the end of the game, at the end of the day, you have, you know, Luka doing special things. You have LeBron unlocking another level to the offense. And if Austin is even, like, okay, there's just not much for the Cleveland Cavaliers to do with this team. And that, and I thought Austin was better than just okay today. So Austin's performance is worth noting. As far as other, you know, like, lesser kind of like role players, I guess, the Lakers got plenty. Let's start in this one with DeAndre Ayton. And yeah, his counterpart in this one, Jared Allen, for stretches of the game, looked unguardable. The Lakers were giving up switches to a greater extent that I would like to see them give up. And I thought the main beneficiary of that was Jared Allen. But still, like, Ayton plays him to a draw. Ayton scores 18 points. Allen scores 18 points. Ayton out-rebounded Allen. Ayton grabbed 9 boards to Allen's 2. And Ayton in this one goes 8 of 13 from the field. Grabbed 6 offensive rebounds in this one, which, if you can give this offense even more possessions, then you're going above and beyond. So Ayton was excellent in that regard. Had a steal, had a block, was a plus 10 in the game. And then the guy who backs up Ayton in this one, Jackson Hayes, played 19 minutes. He only scored 4 points in this one, but he was also a plus 9. So both of those guys wind up being positive impact players going up against a front court that the Cleveland Cavaliers have, where, like, Jared Allen is somebody who's paid significant amounts of money. Evan Mobley's contract, I think, is going to eventually become a bit of an albatross. But Evan Mobley, it was also out there and is also seen as one of the kind of better front court players in the league. And I thought the Lakers front court just thoroughly outplayed the Cavs front court, not just from a center standpoint, but also, you know, you have LeBron out there doing the things that he was doing. I thought Rui had a very good game as well. And just like in all facets of the game, from all position groupings of the game, the Lakers just absolutely beat the snot out of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And Ayton was one of those guys who really helped in that regard. I loved the game that Jake LaRavia played today. He played 38 minutes, which is a lot of Jake LaRavia minutes, but he winds up being a plus 23 in the game. That's a game high. He scored 14 points, knocked down both of his three-pointers, looked extremely confident taking both of those three-pointers. That was great to see. Went 5 of 5 from the field altogether, 2 of 2 from the free throw line, grabbed six boards, had a steal in this one, and I thought was absolutely everywhere. Deflections, you know, tipping the ball out from the muck under the rim, grabbing loose balls, getting out in transition, even if it was just like filling a lane that opens up something from somebody else there. Just a phenomenal Jake LaRavia game. The kind of game that, like, frankly, we needed to see. And I was hoping that we would see again before we get to the postseason, because had he not had games like this heading into the postseason, I would have actually been kind of worried about LaRavia's playability. LaRavia was so good that Vando actually caught a DNP CD today. And I actually thought it made a lot of sense because LaRavia was like, I would not have wanted to give any of LaRavia's minutes to anybody else. So I thought he was really good out there. Rui Hachimura played 19 minutes, scored 14 points, 6 of 8 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3-point range, had a block shot in this one. I actually thought he had 2. Apparently they didn't award him for one of them. Plus 10 in the game, did only grab 1 rebound in this one, but I actually thought he moved his feet quite well. And actually the same goes for, like, LaRavia, I think, moves his feet well as a defender just in general. But I thought there were a few possessions where DeAndre Ayton got switched out onto the perimeter and represented himself well there. I thought Rui Hachimura did the same as well. Jackson Hayes was out there moving his feet. LeBron, Luka, Austin doing enough as defenders as well, especially in the team, from a team standpoint. The Lakers, look, if you look at the quarter breakdown, yes, Cleveland scored 34 in the first quarter, only scored 19 in the second quarter, scored 30 in the third, but the Lakers scored 45, scored 30 in the fourth, but that was like extended garbage minutes. The Lakers defense in this one was pretty damn impressive against one of the more explosive offensive teams in the league. And it requires full buy-in from everybody. It requires a solid game plan, and we got all of those things. It was great to see. All right, we have 54 comments here from y'all. Some of which are of the super comment variety, which means I get to play this bad boy. Fuck Washington! All right, so we will start with the first super comment that we got today. This comes from Laker Pride 6189. It's getting to the point that every time Rui shoots, that MF-er is going in. I agree, especially if it's from the from mid-range, where he is legitimately like he doesn't shoot a ton of volume, but I believe, in terms of like just raw percentage, Rui is the best mid-range jump shooter in the league this year. And he's the best contested mid-range jump shooter in the league this year. Just an incredible tool that, like, he actually spoke about it not before this game. I think it was before their last game or coming out of coming out of the game, where they asked him, beat reporters asked Rui about his mid-range jump shooting. And he said that, like, he grew up watching, like, the Mellows of the world and basically always said that he wanted to be able to, like, you know, be as good as he could possibly be at that shot. And Rui is, you know, like, he's that, honestly, somewhat rare in this era shooter who, if, like, typically if a defender runs a really, like, a just by percentage, a 3-point shooter who is as good as Rui, if a defender runs a shooter who is as good as Rui off of the 3-point line and makes that shooter take a dribble in to where he is shooting a mid-range jumper, normally that defender will have done his job. But with Rui, when Rui, like, you know, has that defender close out as hard to him as his percentage dictates that that defender has to close out to him. Normally, with a shooter, he's like, all right, yeah, that's a good job. You ran Luke Kennard off of the 3-point line. But Rui is so good from the mid-range that it's like, damn, I wish you would have also contained a little bit. And Rui is just at the point here where, yeah, like, and also I think Rui deserves a lot of credit in that, you know, all year it was like, are we sure about moving Rui to the bench? Are we sure about this? Are we, like, what if you lose Rui if you move him to the bench? And it hasn't mattered. The Lakers moved Rui to the bench, and he, you know, immediately, excuse me, it is 12:45 my time. Rui immediately became the exact kind of player that the Lakers needed off of the bench, while the Lakers added the exact kind of player that they needed previously in Marcus Smart to the starting unit. I don't think it's a coincidence that, like, yes, I think the biggest factor has been Luka's just absolutely insane level of play basically since the trade deadline. But also swapping out Marcus Smart or swapping Marcus Smart in for Rui Hachimura, and then Rui also remaining as engaged as he has remained despite coming off of the bench. Like, that's how teams, like, that's the level of sacrifice that is always there in great teams. I'm not saying that I think for sure that the Lakers are great, but the Lakers could not possibly be great without Rui playing the way that he has continued to play, even after, you know, assuming more of a bench role. And yeah, like when Rui goes up, he is definitely at the point where, like, if the ball doesn't go through, almost no matter where he is shooting from, I'm like, oh, really? Like, that was a miss? Okay. Like, kind of surprised overall when Rui doesn't knock down either an open jumper or a pull-up jumper or any kind of jumper. This dude's, you know, shooting the shit out of the ball right now. Let's see. The next question that we have here comes from, let's see. Well, thank you, Brady, for the super comment there. Let's see. I think that's it as far as, nope, let's see. Nope, Brady again. I'm guessing this is just like the super comment that you meant to send earlier, Brady, but nervously excited. Think we will at least split with OKC. I think that's a perfectly fair hope. Now, what I will say, and I said this before, the only way that Luka can win MVP this year is if the Lakers beat OKC in both of these games and Luka just thoroughly outplays Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in both of those games. Those things this late in the season tend to sway voters. And if you're sitting there, you know, either holding a Luka MVP ticket, or if you're just rooting on behalf of, you know, the Lakers finally getting some respect in this specific regard, or if you're a Luka fan from even before he became a Laker, like, if the Lakers win both of these games against OKC and Luka shows out in both of those games, I think he becomes maybe not the favorite for MVP, but it becomes like a very much a three-way sprint to the finish. Because, like, if you beat OKC both of those times, the three seed becomes out of reach for the Denver Nuggets. And at that point, OKC probably falls behind the San Antonio Spurs, and it just becomes a thoroughly subjective conversation about what you value in an MVP season. But if that's what you have riding on this season is Luka's MVP possibilities, then the Lakers have to win both of these games. But I am also nervously excited I also think that the Lakers will probably split with OKC. And if they do that, hopefully it's one of those things where like the Lakers learn both from the win and from the loss and have enough kind of stored away in the data bank just in case the Lakers see the Thunder later in the postseason. But I cannot wait. Like, also, again, I know I mentioned it earlier in the show, but the Lakers, not, you know, it looked initially like they were looking past the Washington Wizards. They take care of business against them, beat the brakes off of them over the course of that game. I thought tonight was like an extremely trappy game, and the Lakers just, you know, I think Cleveland kind of jumped out on top early. This wasn't a wire-to-wire win for the Lakers, but the Lakers, I thought, you know, kind of bounced back, and once they took the lead, they kind of put that lead in a chokehold and put Cleveland. And it, like, listen to me talk about, like, even while I'm describing a game that the Lakers just played against the Cleveland Cavaliers, I am substituting the Cleveland Cavaliers for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That is what happens when you look ahead to the game that is on the immediate horizon now. I can't wait for that. Those games against OKC, they are going to be dogfights. There are going to be fights in the mentions on Twitter, and there are going to be flags planted and all of that good stuff. And I think it's going to be a great preview of the Western Conference Finals. Let's see. Brady again. Right now might be more likely takes less and stays. Yeah, I mean, like, look, I don't know if you guys know. I'm sorry, RoboCop. Anthony's cursed optimism. My bad. You know what? You're right. The Lakers are going to lose every game from here on out. No. Brady asks about LeBron's future. So I don't know if you guys have checked it out yet. I hope you guys have. But Pete and Jovan and I recorded a Great Western Forum, I think last Thursday. And in that episode, I actually walked out onto the limb and said, I think LeBron is back after this season. And you watch him play, you look at this team's chemistry, like, I want to see this group run it back with a couple of peripheral additions and some kind of supplemental talent as well. I think LeBron is a very big part of that. And I also think, like, you know, I saw ESPN. I didn't even read it because no offense to anybody, but it just felt like a waste of everybody's time. But you know, there was that ESPN article, you know, the six potential free agency destinations here for LeBron this upcoming season. I didn't even run through them. And, you know, I saw there was a lot of speculation and sourced speculation and stuff. It's just whatever. I can't think of a better situation for LeBron than the Lakers next year in a vacuum. And I certainly can't think of any better situations for LeBron next year when you consider the amounts of money that some of these teams can pay without moving heaven and earth, right? Like, do the Cavs want to sign and trade Jarrett Allen so that LeBron could go to Cleveland? Maybe, maybe not, right? And again, I hearken back to, or I always, you know, look back at the leaks and the reports back when LeBron was available last summer, and the Mavs, the Cavs, the, you know, go on down the line, and all of these teams were like, of course we're interested in LeBron James as a buyout candidate, you know? And it's like, if I'm LeBron and my wife loves it in LA, I have my kid at the University of Arizona. I have another kid literally on the Lakers roster. I have my third kid going to school in the greater LA area as well. I have all of these roots that have been planted for going on a decade. And oh yeah, by the way, I would be teammates and continue to be teammates with an ascending top 1, 2, or 3 player in Luka. no, it's sporadic. I'm not gonna drop that line again. Like if I'm LeBron, just like kind of gaming this all out, I don't see a better option than the Lakers next season. And I do genuinely believe that, like, if Luka says to the Lakers, this has been really fun, right? If JJ Redick says, hey, you guys have seen how this guy has assumed the role that he's playing in, right? And we know that Austin is going to have a loud voice in some of these decisions too. Like, LeBron is going to have a whole bunch of people vouching for him whose voices really matter. And if LeBron takes a reasonable amount that is still fair to him as well, then the Lakers open up that much extra money to be able to supplement that group with even more talent. Even granting how much more money, you know, Austin Reeves is going to be paid next year. Like, that to me seems far and away the best option that LeBron has. We just watched this cat. The Cavs are supposedly an option. Lakers beat the shit out of them tonight. Like, that means something. And then also, while the Lakers were beating the shit out of them tonight, one of the like signature plays of the night was Austin throwing a lob that looked a lot like the Dwayne Wade lob. LeBron is catching that thing from on high and slamming. Like, it was just an unbelievable moment that I know that LeBron thoroughly enjoyed as well. So I think that it is likelier than not that LeBron returns next year. That's somewhat sourced. That is probably more speculative, but I think LeBron is back next season. Now, Joe Little, 4201, asking, what amount do you want to see LeBron back on? I don't know, man. Like, I want him, like, I don't want to give up, like, a specific figure because that feels too, like, diving into, like, I've been reluctant to even do this with Austin. I don't want to dive into LeBron's pockets, but what I will kind of hope for here is that he and the Lakers are able to find a number, be mature adults, one, to actually, like, negotiate and find that number. But I would like for he and the Lakers to find a number that helps the Lakers compete, but also isn't so offensive to LeBron. And the Lakers could be petty and they could basically say, like, you can only get this much from Golden State. You can only get this much from the Clippers. You can only get this much from Cleveland. We will offer you $1 more than that. Like, I don't see the benefit of being that kind of petty, especially given everything that LeBron has done for the Lakers. And if I'm LeBron, it's like, look, and this is something I'll never forget the conversation I had with somebody I really, really trust in the Lakers orbit. Going into last season, there was this talk about, like, LeBron's future and the money that he would be potentially owed here moving forward. And, like, at what point do the Lakers stop giving him max deals? At what point does LeBron stop demanding max deals and this and that and the other? And where we left off the conversation 2 summers ago was, like, look, LeBron's top priority to put a bow on his insane career is to win a championship with Bronny sitting over there on the bench. Like, that would be something that would just make LeBron's career. It's something that he genuinely, desperately wants, right? And he doesn't want to say, he doesn't want to, you know, go through the whole, like, I will take this much less to make this pot. Because at any point, any superstar could be like, yeah, put me on a minimum contract. We win a championship next year. But that does a disservice to the amount of work that it became or that it took to become a max level player. And in LeBron's case, to become and maintain that level for this ridiculous amount of time that he has maintained that level of play. And so, like, I think if LeBron and the Lakers could arrive at a number that is still respectable from LeBron's perspective and also productive from the Lakers' perspective, then that's the best case scenario here for all involved. And it allows the Lakers to check off boxes. This notion that the Lakers, especially after watching the way that they have played since LeBron came back from his most recent injury, I don't see how anybody on planet Earth could watch this Lakers team play and be like, you know what? This team doesn't need that guy. Abso-freaking-lutely not. The Lakers need a player playing at this level. And maybe you're saying, oh, he's not going to play at this level next year. Maybe, but this idea that the Lakers could just let this dude walk and then immediately find a player who is at least as good as he is in that role, and on top of that, find another player or another set of players using the money that they save to make, you know, to make it all worthwhile, that is a difficult ask. So I'm of the opinion I want him back. I want him back at a respectable number, and I want him to retire a Laker. I've kind of decided that that's what I'm rooting for. Watching him thrive, like accept and thrive in this role, it has been so cool. It's been so awesome. It's just awesome. It's really fun to watch, and I hope we get to continue watching it. All right, so. The Lakers were giving Luka a hard time after the game about his dunk. Luka said that he thinks he almost hit his head on the rim. This close, Luka, like this close to almost hitting your head on the rim. let's see. Let's go through some of your, some more comments here, some more questions. Where are we at? Let's see. Fat Man Yoga. Yay. Hey, Anthony, I live in Waco. Want to go to the OKC game versus, OKC versus LA game together on Thursday. My treat. I appreciate it, but, no, my parents are in town. My father-in-law just turned 73, I think. Today, literally, like while I've been on the air. Happy birthday, Roger. Easter is this weekend. I cannot get away from the family, but I really appreciate the offer. RoboCop, what are your thoughts on Bronny playing more than Vando? Kind of the reason why we can't keep a lead for so long. No energy, no defense, no sub. I think this is one of those things that head coaches will do sometimes, where they want to keep the rotation as true as normal. And Bronny is kind of like a fair substitute or the closest substitute that the Lakers have for Marcus Smart. And again, I keep going back to that Bronny getting these minutes as a potential olive branch here to LeBron. It's like reeling him back in. I don't think it's a coincidence that that Bronny has been getting these minutes, and LeBron's kind of joy for the game has popped back up to the extent that it has. The winning has helped. Luka doing the things that he is doing has helped. LeBron finding a role that makes sense for him and the team has obviously helped too. But just speaking as a father, like I have a son, and if I somehow, some way do this long enough for Miles to be like a viable co-host while actually earning the opportunity to do so, like that would be pretty cool. You guys know that I have Avery as a regular voice on here, right? Like I think I still have Avery explaining Lightning. Actually, you know what? I'm going to I'm going to play this like as an explanation for LeBron finding his joy. Here's look at the way that I'm looking at Avery while she's explaining how lightning works, according to her mom.
All right. So Avery is going to explain lightning.
So why they're lightning? Because they're bowling.
Who's bowling?
The angels.
Okay. The angels are bowling.
And if they have a lightning, that means they have a strike.
A strike.
Yeah. And that means they have all of the points.
Okay. I like it. I like the theory. Who told you that?
Mommy.
Mommy. Good job, Mommy. All right. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
You guys, you know, it's just, look, when you have kids, it just rewires you. And watching LeBron get to play with Bronny, share like actual real NBA minutes with Bronny, probably really matters to LeBron. And now look, when Marcus comes back, unfortunately, I think those minutes should and will all probably dissipate. And if they don't, then I'll be asking some questions. But for the time being, Bronny has actually been fine-ish, I would say. I wish he could shoot a little bit better than he can. And I think, like, in terms of, like, the big picture here, I think it's been very productive for Bronny to get the minutes that he has. And I can't wait to get Marcus Smart back as soon as they can. I need him back for these OKC games. Need him back for those ones. Let's see. The next question here comes from all right. So I've seen a lot of people attributing this quote to me over the last like week or so. You're all idiots. Because in that video, I literally dispel the notion that Nico was right. Like, anywho. All right, let's see. I think that we are just about good here. Yeah, let's see. Yeah. Oh. Timothy Park, 5137. What's your take on Reeves right now? He's obviously dealing with a wrist injury, but do you think there's anything else to that's contributing to his relatively inconsistent play for his standards? I think he's exhausted. Like, again, I kind of harp back on that stat that he played more minutes in the month of March than any other player in the league. Without having double checked it myself, I'm going to go ahead and believe the broadcast in that regard. And I think that has been a factor here. I also just think that, you know, the Lakers have been playing a lot better teams, and some of those teams have defenders who give Austin some issues. And I think those teams and those defenders deserve some credit as well. I think that the more that they have kind of figured it out for LeBron has meant that, like, Austin kind of has to play, you know, the jazz music off to the side and make sure, like, to carry the tune without getting too much in the way, while also being productive in the moments that he is called upon to be productive. And I think that is sometimes a difficult trail to navigate. So there's a lot going on there. I don't want to make too many excuses for this guy. At the end of the day, he has to produce. And I do hope that the Lakers find a way to get this guy some rest before the end of the season. I know once the season end, because the Lakers just solidified themselves as a definite six seed or higher, the Lakers will have, you know, roughly a week or so off before the playoffs begin, or their playoff matchup begins. So that'll help Austin, but I'm hoping that they figure out a way to get Austin, you know, a breather here and there, you know, while also maintaining their spot in the standings too. But I think there's a lot going on here for Austin, and I still believe in the dude as a player. It is, I'll maybe do some asking around to see what's up with his wrist and if there is any kind of actual healing as a possibility here before we get to the playoffs. But look, if Austin isn't 100% right, then the playoff outlook changes quite a bit. Let's see the next question. Let me make sure. Okay, cool. All right. I think we are good. Yeah. Sporadic 18, Great Western Forum live show in Vegas at Summer League. Here's what I'll say without giving too much away. Odyssey, I do think, wants more live shows to take place. I think they're looking kind of more in the LA area, but I bet we would be able to convince them to do something around Summer League as well. Schedules permitting and all of that stuff, you know, that also plays a factor here too. But what I will say, Pete and I hosted, back when we were hosting Locked On Lakers, Pete and I hosted a live show at the Tom's Urban right across the street from what was at the time Staples Center, and had an absolute blast doing it. Like, it was so freaking fun, and I would love to be able to do something like that again. I love interacting with listeners. I love interacting with, I hate calling people fans because it makes me sound a lot like a lot bigger deal than I actually am. My favorite story ever in my time doing this was the time that, like, Jen and I sat down for lunch. The person who was taking our order there for lunch stopped and said, like, I'm kind of nervous, you know, meeting you. And Jen was just like, what? Nervous for this guy? Why? And and that's exactly how I see myself. So I'm incredibly fortunate to be able to do this. And you guys are the reason that I'm able to continue doing this. And if there is an opportunity to either get up on stage and talk about the Lakers with you guys there watching, or even just do like a watch along or a meetup or something like that, then maybe that's something that we'll do together there in Vegas. I'm definitely going to be there, though, and I hope to meet as many of you there as I possibly can. Listen, and Drip Show, hit me up about a potential giveaway there as well. That'd be fun. All right. Man, what a win. The Lakers beat the brakes off of the Cleveland Cavaliers 127-113. They win their 50th game of the season, solidify themselves as Pacific Division champions or winners, and are out of the play-in for sure here moving forward, with plenty of work ahead of them. And so Harrison and I are going to be here in the lounge tomorrow, and then I will be live recapping the game Thursday with Raj here in the lounge. And then, depending on how that game goes and what the vibes are and what the interest is in it, maybe I'll do something on Friday as well. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you guys tomorrow. How about this team, huh?